Welcome to BlindBargains.com coverage of CSUN 2015. The biggest names, provocative interviews, and wall-to-wall exhibit hall coverage. Brought to you by the American Foundation for the Blind.
VisionAware.org is a free, easy-to-use website for adults with vision problems. If you're having trouble seeing and don't know where to turn for answers, VisionAware provides you with expert solutions and advice. Learn about your eye condition. Get practical advice for working with vision loss. Discover how to keep doing all the things you love to do. Find help, hope, and connection at visionaware.org.
Now, here's Joe Steinkamp.
Hello, everyone. Joe Steinkamp with more audio from CSUN 2015. This time out, Mr. Steve Baum from Kurzweil talks about K1000 and some of the things that have happened in the past and some ideas about what could possibly happen in the future to K1000. Now, what you're going to hear towards the end is me asking questions to Mr. Baum because we didn't get permission from people in the room to use their voices. So Mr. Baum asked that for us to use this audio in a podcast that I actually asked the questions that were asked within the confines of this presentation. So you will hear audio dropout and then me ask these questions, and then you'll hear Mr. Baum's answers back to the audience. Remember, if you have any questions or comments or suggestions for our wonderful podcast, write us at feedback@blindbargains.com and let us know what you think of this or any of our audios from CSUN 2015. We also thank Mr. Steve Baum for allowing us to use this audio, and we hope you enjoy it. And now, our audio from CSUN 2015.
All right. First, welcome. Thanks for coming. I want to begin with a brief apology. I've been to a few of these things today and was very impressed by the fact that there were almost always handouts, there were almost always, you know, advanced notions of exactly what was going to be talked about. There were great preparations, and really most important, there were PowerPoints up on the screen. There aren't. I was just going to talk. And the reason for that, there's several reasons for that. One, pretty much for my entire career, I've been treating paper as the problem. It is paper that was originally not accessible, and it is what everything was written on. And certainly for the blind, the development of OCR to begin with, the use of OCR, and all sorts of interesting products for the blind, really all had to do with paper. Paper isn't such a problem anymore, but nonetheless, I didn't want to add to what I still, every now and then, see as the problem in that respect. By the way, in case anyone's counting, the first commercial reading machine for the blind, which was really the first use of omnifont or multifont OCR, is now 38 years old as of,
wow,
right around now. It's been a long time. It's been around for a while. Secondly, as far as PowerPoints go, use of the screen is even a more obvious source of a problem. If I expect the audience to focus on the screen, I'm likely, as a consequence, to lose some of the impetus that I would normally have to talk. And certainly one of the worst things that can happen with a PowerPoint presentation is you get a presenter who basically repeats what's up on the screen verbatim, precisely. No one wants that. And so that's one reason why I don't have PowerPoint up there. I will add, though, that although the screen obviously is a problem for people who cannot see it, it is not an unsolvable problem. And if you wanted to go to the Sensitech booth, which is booth 921, I was very impressed at the solution that they are showing, which is basically an iPad app that you click a button, it does the OCR, it speaks, it's quite wonderful. And one blind presenter from behind that booth was using that at various presentations today to collect what was actually up on the screens. So that can be done increasingly, and I'm really sort of impressed that that can be done. It's a very good thing. Another reason is simply that when it comes down to it, I'm used to primarily doing user group meetings these days. And user group meetings are where I have a bunch of rambunctious customers who hopefully are there to tell me everything about what's wrong with my current release. And hopefully are going to love what I've already done for them in the next release, because typically there's an announcement about that, but there's a lot of give and take with the room. I'm not entirely sure this is that same kind of audience, so that may not really happen, but nonetheless, could happen, and that is yet another reason. And then probably the most obvious reason of all, I'm really kind of lazy. When you get down to it, I'm not entirely sure I wanted to write just one more presentation. That's the main thing. Except I will say one additional thing about responding to your questions. I want that to be possible. I want you to ask questions throughout this. I will attempt to the best of my ability to be honest and to be truthful. And if I don't know an answer, I will let you know that. But the other thing I will say is that if you don't think of that question right away, or if you simply don't like to raise your voice in a room of other people, you can feel free to provide me with that question. And there's someone towards the back from Kurzweil who will be happy to collect them. Yes, they are lead sheets. Don't worry about the fact that they're lead sheets. Just put your email down if you want me to answer your question, and I will be happy to do so. If you actually do want information from the marketing department, well, they'd love that too, and that'd be great. But basically, I'm doing this as a way for you to answer, or for me to come up with a somewhat more detailed and more precise answer for questions you might have. So I'm here primarily to talk about Kurzweil 1000. It has been around for a very long time. This is version 14. And unless you want me to do something else, what I was going to first do is walk fairly quickly through the list of things that are new in version 14. That is not useful, of course, if you don't know what version 13, 10, 11, 12, etc. did. But for some of you, perhaps it is useful. At various shows, by the way, I'm constantly asked what's new, and I always have to say, compared to what? Because people don't necessarily have the most recent release. And occasionally the answers are complicated enough that I have to go to the product itself and look at this, the new features manuals.
New features for version 14.
You'll notice there's a few of them. I collected them from version 6 upwards in response to an attempt to answer people's questions. And in this case, I'll only do 14. And instead of showing it at this magnification,
read. Start reading. Oops. F5. Read.
I'm going
to. Test submenu. Select a bookmark. File operations. Contains bookmarks.
I'm going to use, for my own purposes, the bookmark dialog, because that gives me a fairly good summary of what's in the document. Makes life easier, at least for me. I think I organized the features rather than organizing them by how important each individual one might be. I organized them basically by menu, where they came from, what the use is. I will move very quickly through probably all of this, but I'll try to spend a little more time on ones that I think are particularly important. There is one thing I sort of wanted to say first about why one makes changes to products. And, you know, part of it is to justify my salary. It's there because if I didn't do that, someone would eventually figure out that they don't need me. So I would like to be needed, so consequently you make changes to products. One also makes changes to products in response to the technical ecosystem in which the product lives. For example, you really do want it to work with the next version or the current version of Microsoft Word. You want it to work with the current operating system. There are always issues to be addressed. That's always tricky. There's competitive pressure. That's, you know, not a huge issue with the Kurzweil 1000, but sometimes a competitor does something really wonderful and you want to match or even exceed what they've done. Also, another thing is the nature of the product itself sometimes impels you to the next release. You do something and you think it's a good start, but you want to do more. If you get very little feedback, you probably won't do more, but in general, there's a kind of technological sense of direction that a product that's going to be released many times has. Finally, and most importantly, and really the reason I bring this up, is changes happen because customers ask for them. Customers sometimes ask for them in ways that are vague and where they may not even recognize that the change I made was for them. Other times they're really very precise and they just say, well, of course I should have done that, and why didn't I think of it? An awful lot of the changes I'm going to go through right now really come from that. These are from customers fundamentally.
Extracting images into PDF files, level 2.
One of the things that I've been asked about really a fair amount over the last few years was better support for PDF, in particular for creating PDF. I already had fairly good support for reading PDF, although it's already always a recognition operation, but people wanted to be able to create them. That surprised me because, just like paper, I think of PDF as being the problem. PDF is inaccessible, it's a complicated format, nearly everybody uses it, and yet it is often a format that a blind person cannot readily get access to. That has changed to a certain extent over the years. The support provided in Adobe's own free reader, for example, is really not bad for most PDF files, although not necessarily for all of them. So it's not as bad as it used to be. But this notion that the blind people wanted to create PDFs were a surprise to me until the person who asked for that responded to an email from me by saying, well, I want to do it because my coworkers need PDFs. That's what they expect. Or the other response I got was, I have a scanner, and sometimes what I need to do is scan the material and send it to another person, and that person always wants PDF because they're sighted. And it turns out that's one of the things the scanners do well, of course, typically, is create PDFs, but the software that the scanner vendor usually ships to do that is not very accessible. Ours is better. Anyway, lots of things. So basically, creation of PDF was a bigger thing. And I added ways of extracting images, either full page images or partial images, from your current file into a PDF. That struck me as useful, and it's in the product now.
PNG has been added as a supported image format.
No big deal, from my perspective anyway. We actually have supported PNG for years, but people didn't know about it. So when you say you want to open a file, PNG is now on the list of extensions that are supported when you select an image-based thing that you want to open. So it's there. It does work.
Suggest a file name, even for a document created by typing.
Such a small thing, I hate to mention it, but it was asked for by a user. When you save a new document, it will almost always give you a suggestion of its name, but it wouldn't if you typed the whole document rather than scanned it from something. We changed that.
File operation, scanning and recognition, OCR upgrades, level 2.
One of the important ones. Generally, every release where there's a decent OCR upgrade, I make that OCR upgrade available. So the latest and greatest versions of Abby are in this product and of OmniPage. Now, I used the term OmniPage advisedly. In previous releases, it was called ScanSoft. It actually came from the same vendor. They call it OmniPage. They had told us in no uncertain terms when we originally negotiated with them that we could not call it OmniPage. So we called it ScanSoft, which was actually an old name they used to use for that technology. And something like a year or two later, a competitor of ours suddenly added OmniPage as their OCR engine. We went back to the vendor and said, what gives? And he said, we never told you that. You can call it OmniPage. Maybe that's true. Maybe I made it up. But, you know, nonetheless, the name has changed simply because it turns out we are allowed to say it. So, yes, it's OmniPage.
A new scanning mode.
A new scanning mode. This is another part of PDF. If you, it used to be you could scan and recognize. You could recognize previously scanned images, or you could choose to create images. The create image step, there's really a new menu item in there now, and it is to create PDFs. So if you want to directly scan to PDF, you can do so in the product. Again, one reason is simply because customers wanted to be able to create PDFs for other people. They may find it's useful, though, because you can scan all your images that you're planning to use for one job into one PDF document. That actually makes it somewhat easier to transport it, move it around, open it, and recognize it for something else. I will add one other thing about PDF, because I may have forgotten to put it in this list. The PDFs that we create, oddly enough, are inaccessible. They are not PDFs that you can turn around and just read in a very simple manner. And I'm not going to go into, you know, huge details as to why, but suffice it to say, it's actually really hard to do that well. It turns out, however, that the OCR engines, at least one of them, OmniPage, does it very well. So that is now a feature in KOCR Util, which is the very badly named utility that provides direct access to OCR. So here's a nice little tip. Create your big OCR, your big PDF file. If you want to send that to a friend and you want it to be accessible, open that same file in KOCR Util and indicate that what you want to do is convert it to, save it as a PDF. Why? When the input is PDF, would you want to save to PDF? Because this time it is a tagged PDF. It is completely accessible. It will be wonderful, and it will be done remarkably quickly. OCR in KOCR Util is really fast and really useful.
Use bookmarks to select a page range for recognition.
This is one of the smallest features that anyone has ever suggested, and I really love it. It's one of the ones that I end up thinking is actually a big deal. Suppose you have a large PDF file, and suppose you want to break it up into chapters, you want to do various things, but you don't really want to recognize the whole thing right now. You want to do it in sections. Really, turns out, a surprisingly common notion. File open, open the PDF file, except it's going to first ask you, as it usually does, to specify if you want a range of pages that you might want to recognize. Well, you have no idea what pages that these chapters are on, because, of course, it's not accessible. You don't have it yet. It turns out now you can go to the bookmarks, if there are any, associated with the PDF file, and they are automatically there and opened. You can find the appropriate beginning of the chapter, the appropriate endpoint, and it's really very simple. And I was embarrassed I'd never thought of it. It's a great idea. So that's in there.
Recognition engine hint message can now be repeated.
Okay, that's so small, even I don't care.
Scanning and recognition, level 1. Reading, contains voiceware speech update, level 2.
Okay, one of those sort of technical driving forces behind a change in product is some technologies you buy from vendors, the vendors improve those technologies. I've already mentioned OCR, that is a major important improvement. But another one might be the text-to-speech that you're using. So we continue to like what is sometimes called VoiceWare, other times called NeoSpeech. We have Kate, we have Paul, and we have added a third, which I will play as soon as I sort of get out of all this. But It's really a nice speech update, speech engine.
Read current note.
I really love the fact that it does that. What do I have there? A dash and an angle bracket. And somehow that's translated into a comma or a question mark. I have no idea why. But gee, I didn't do it. They did it. That's the speech engine at work. Again, not a big deal. Read a current note. We'll go into why that's there in a moment, why that makes sense.
A quick mechanism for proofreading.
Proofreading is basically the ability to read, but at the same time be told about all punctuation, be told about capital letters when they happen, be told about that kind of stuff. You used to have to go into a settings file, make a change, come back out, start reading in that manner, then remember to change back. That is sort of a pain in the neck. It is now a simple function key press. It's really fairly straightforward.
More ways to copy, cut, and paste text, level 2.
Again, I'm not going to go into this in any real detail, but copy, cut, and paste now with modifier keys has two additional kinds of things. One is, are you cutting the text as well as all formatting information, including the color of the image, of the text, and that kind of thing, or do you just want the plain text? It used to always be formatted. Now you can kind of choose that on the fly if you wish. The other thing is sometimes when you copy or cut, you want to go to the clipboard. Sometimes you want to append to the clipboard. Those options are both available.
Voice notes. Edit. Record a voice note.
Usually features flow from Kurzweil 1000 to Kurzweil 3000, which is our product for learning disabilities. This was a change for us. We went instead from the 3000 to the 1000. The 3000 has always had the ability to allow a user to record a voice note. The reason that makes sense in the 3000 market is that user may not be very, well, certainly fluent as a typist and maybe fluent as a speller and maybe not that good at constructing words in general to express those his thoughts, at least in writing, might be better at doing it verbally. We've finally taken that feature, which has been in 3,000 a long time, and put it in the 1,000. You could kind of think of it as a way of packaging MP3 files and sticking them in the middle of a KES file. You can also then, by the way, extract them and use them elsewhere if you would like. You could also, rather than recording your own voice, you could actually put something there which is the sound effect or the note or the lecture or the music stream that you happen to listen to at that particular point in that particular document. Though why you would want to do that, I'm not entirely sure. But it's there.
Editing and announcement of subscripts and superscripts.
Subscript and superscript recognition has always been in the product, and people who save the documents in formats like RTF might have been aware of that. Oddly enough, we never told the user for whom this stuff is all being done for, the user who is actually in front of the keyboard using the product. And so now we do announce subscripts and superscripts when you move character by character. We also do allow you to edit those if you wish.
Quickly change the case of subtext.
Again, a user request on the K1000 listserv. Could I have some way to change a block of text to be all uppercase or all lowercase, or I think what's called capital case, which is where you have the first letter of each word capitalized, the rest lowercase. So yes, now you can. Really don't do that for whole documents. It would be a big mistake. Since you won't be able to undo
it
if it's that big.
Navigation. Contains bookmark. Go to phrase. Navigate in a thesaurus or dictionary definition.
Minor. I'll skip it.
Search for a page with a full page image.
Kind of nice. If you have full page images and you want to find them, you can now do that with the find dialog. That was a wrinkle I had never thought of before.
Create a paragraph-based bookmark.
There are some people who bookmark relatively small things. I have at least some customers who really like to bookmark really big things. And I first argued against that because it reminded me of how my son used to highlight entire books, thinking that he was doing something useful. I, by the way, ultimately apologized to him because it turns out he had reading difficulties. He was doing something useful. He was getting eye and hand coordination as a matter of, as a way of learning to read. It was kind of important for him. I didn't know that. So he corrected me on this. But there are people who like relatively large things as highlights, or the equivalent of highlights, which is a bookmark. There is now a way to bookmark paragraphs. There is also a way to select with the multi-page mark, which is Control plus M, and have that entire thing be a bookmark if you want.
Create a bookmark using a mark.
That was
mark or unmark a position.
Oh, well, if I was going to do that, I'd better make it possible to unmark a mark, because otherwise you will always be making really large bookmarks, and that was the way to do that.
Navigation, level 1, tools, verbosity, and help. Go to phrase,
there's one,
level 2.
Oh, yes. Go to phrase, this is very badly named. This one I came up with. I'm still waiting for a customer to tell me why it's a good idea, or even to say, this would be a good idea if you had done it right. I'm not even sure I have done it right. One thing I don't like is I don't like the name, even though I came up with it. Go to phrase kind of implies that it's really just another mechanism to find, and why isn't it find instead, and why wouldn't I just use find? Basically, that's not quite what you're doing. Suppose, like me, you read mystery novels, and suppose it confuses you thoroughly that there are 47 proper names used in the first 6 chapters, and you have no idea who these people are, particularly after you put the back book down and don't come back to it for a week or two. Then you pick it up, and finally at page 347, you have figured out who is the terrible villain, and you have no idea who this person is because you don't remember the first use of that person's word name. No problem. Go to phrase, type in the person's name, maybe their full name, hit enter. You will have the basically what looks like a bookmark dialog return. You will have in reading order all the uses of those words, or the uses of the first name, or the uses of the last name. It's capable of dealing with all that. And now you can go back to early uses of that and get a sense as to what's going on. There is, though, another idea that I think is actually more important there. That is, suppose you are a teacher. Suppose you are preparing this document for many students. And suppose what's really important is you have a list of key phrases that you really want them to know and know well. You can use this feature at that first such occurrence. You can go back in the dialogue and change the descriptor field. Make it what you want it to be. Make it so it is a very good description at that point in the book for what this person needs to know. And hopefully, if you tell them that, they will start using that feature, no matter how badly named, as a reminder of exactly what's important for them to know.
Navigate in the thesaurus or dictionary definition.
Let's see.
Search for a page in the full page image. Navigation, level 1. Contains bookmark, tools, verbosity. American Heritage Dictionary, 5th edition, level 2.
Okay. Another thing from a vendor, the American Heritage Dictionary has been updated. We now have the update.
Spell checking bookmark and note descriptions.
Spell checking. This came from a customer. The customer takes copious notes. He uses those notes later on to write papers. He thought, gee, it would be really nice if you spell checked those notes for me. We don't automatically, but that is now a setting. You can now indicate that that's how you want spell check to work.
The spell checker has changed.
The spell checker itself has been completely redone in that we've moved to an open source spell checker. It is called Hunspell, which may mean nothing to any of you, but it is the spell checker that is used by OpenOffice. As a consequence, you can find additional dictionaries all over the place for this particular spell checker. There are instructions in the manual as to how to install and hopefully use those. We include, you know, I think 10, but if you happen to need a spell checker for Serbo-Croatian, there probably is one. You can probably find and use it.
Spelling can be interrupted.
Again, no big deal.
Books are freely accessible books.
This one I actually like. In fact, I've been using it today. You are a Bookshare user. Congratulations, that's great. You probably know your user ID and your password. Guess what? I don't. Or it might be that you just aren't actually a Bookshare user and you don't have that information available. You can nonetheless use Bookshare, look up a particular keyword, be it by author or be it by title, get a list of books. Some of them will be identified as freely available. Look for the ones that are freely available. You can download those. It won't ask you any questions. And that is a service of Bookshare.org. We have very little to do with it, other than that we finally noticed it and said, gee, we should make this a feature. So that is there.
Last bookmark at this level. Bookshare freely accessible tools, verbosity, and removed feature. Additional have ideas for new features or enhancements?
That's it, except for that conclusion. Do you have ideas? Ideas for new features and enhancements? There are probably a bunch of other things I ought to be doing with my time, and I'd be happy to make them some of the things that you want me to do. The way the product works at this point, major releases are relatively rare. I don't know when I will be doing a version 15. It turns out, however, that I am given permission to put features into patches, i.e. features into updates. So there's already been a 14.01, there has been, a couple days ago, 14.02. There will be future updates as we go along. If you would have some idea that I actually think I can do quickly enough to pretend is an update, well, let me know what it is, and I will try to get that in. I do not have a notion as to when there will be a version 15, but I can tell you there will be a 14.03, 14.04, you know, why I make mistakes. It does happen. So those are things that I expect will be in here. Now, on the program, and maybe why you're here, was a lecture on using Kurzweil 1000 in education. It is 7:54. I guess I'm almost done, actually. But I should say that I actually have written that paper. It was about 14 pages long, and I really didn't feel like I had time to stand up here and read it, particularly since I wanted things to be a little more potentially interactive than that. I do have it. I will be happy to make that available to anyone who wants it, and I can do so in the KES file format very easily from this computer right now. But I could also do it from with RTF or with anything else that I can support from Kurzweil 1000, which is a fair number of formats. There's a lot that is available that I can do. The basic structure of that document, just to at least talk about it.
File. As of new. Recently opened. 1A Tram. 2K 1000 as an educational tool. Page 1.
Using Kurzweil 1000 as an educational.
Select a bookmark. Introduction.
Again, the bookmarks, because it's how I live and how I work. Who knows what I said in the introduction, but it doesn't matter.
Getting the document. Contains bookmarks.
Getting the document is actually a fairly long section.
Is it available electronically? Level 2.
That's obviously the first thing. Can I get it? Is it there? Is it something I could already use?
Kurzweil 1000 as a file viewer. Level 3. Access to online repositories.
Online repositories are things like Bookshare.org.
Access to online encyclopedias.
We have them, of course, and they're useful.
Last bookmark. Is it available? Accurate scans of hard copy material. Contains bookmarks.
Accurate scans of hard copy material, the subject of considerable discussion.
Scanner optimization. Level 3.
How to use scanner optimization.
Recognition engines.
How to optimize between different OCR engines. That exists too.
Scanner resolution.
What scanner resolution to pick if you're going to pick a particular one to start.
Scanner thresholding.
Thresholding is how should the product and maybe the OCR treat the, exactly what defines a pixel. Is a pixel one bit, black and white only? Is it grayscale, which is usually 8 bits? Is it color, 24 bits? Those sort of thresholding decisions make a big difference in terms of recognition, particularly for complicated material.
Recognition statistics.
How to make use of recognition statistics. I've given entire lectures on this subject because people in general don't even kind of think of the fact that that might be useful. But basically, recognition statistics is our notion as to how well the OCR is doing on a page-by-page basis. And you can indicate when you want us to warn you that it's not doing well. That is useful primarily because the number one cause of bad OCR is the person doing the scanning. I hate to, be the bearer of bad news, but the number of images that I have seen where what's really happening is that half of the person's hand is underneath the page that he's trying to scan. That is a fairly serious source of recognition errors. Or the page is wildly crooked, or it's way too dark, or all sorts of things like that. Often you can correct those on the fly. Recognition statistics can help you do so. After the fact, recognition statistics let you know how to go back to a particular spot and say, oh, I need to do this again. I need to hopefully, ideally, scan it again, or maybe I simply need to edit it here very, very seriously to make it useful.
Last bookmark, accurate scans of hard copy material. Production editing. Quick access to poorly recognized pages. Level 3.
I already sort of did this. Once you've scanned, after the fact, you may or may not want to clean things up. Where you particularly want to clean things up is if you are not the only user of your system. Kurzweil 1000 is designed with the notion that, in general, the person doing the scanning is also doing the reading. That is really the big reason why you can read while you scan. It's because scanning is an incredibly boring task. And it's important to have something else to do, and if that something else might be reading what you're scanning, that would be a perfectly fine thing. You can also, of course, read something else. That works too. Nonetheless, if you are scanning for someone else, or if you are scanning both for yourself and other people, which is what volunteers for Bookshare.org do, we'd like to make you that useful and help. And poorly recognized pages dialogue is a really good place to start. That is a place that will tell you what are the worst pages in terms of recognition accuracy. Go to those, start there, clean those up first.
Ranked spelling.
Everybody know what ranked spelling is? It's one of my weirder ideas. At first I called it inverted spelling. The basic idea is odd but simple. A spell checker has a tendency to take you to, the next error in the document. You fix that, press the button again, and it goes to the one after that. It will go to the same error frequently, or it might, and it can be kind of annoying. It works, but it struck me that it could be done better. The way ranked spelling works is it spell checks the whole document and keeps all the position information and all the other information you need, so it could go back and bring up each individual error. Instead, though, it sorts those errors by exactly what the recognition error is. No surprise, but about 3/4 of the errors in a document are not errors at all, they're proper names. Fix those once, not again and again. And while then also it might just be words that you're unfamiliar with or the spell checker is unfamiliar with, again, fix those once. You can fix them relatively quickly. Then you get down to the tail, the long tail sometimes, of items that were misidentified only once. Those are likely to be real errors.
Automatic corrections.
Automatic corrections, again, have been in the product for years, but it's something that bears a little explanation. You can, in the spell checker, correct things once, correct things so that the whole document is corrected for that particular misspelling, add the word to the spell checker, but there's also a strange mechanism that lets you correct that in a way that says, do this correction permanently. I never want to see this mistake again. Not just in this document, in all documents. So, what's an example? C-A-U-G-B-T. Well, it's caught. It's not a B, it's an H. That's a relatively common OCR error. Really, there's no excuse for the OCR to have done it again. And so this time, say, fix this permanently. What you're doing is putting this into a table that Kurzweil 1000 will pay attention to, and every time it sees that as a recognition result, it will correct it automatically without asking. Be careful. Do not use that to correct something that's going to turn up as somebody's proper name. That happens, and I usually am the person who's told about it. You can go through and delete those corrections if you have to. Anyway, I think a powerful and useful feature, and it's been, again, been in the product a lot.
Production editing, enriching your KES files. There are no bookmarks within this bookmark. Enriching your KES files.
Enriching your KES files, I think I added today, and I added mainly two things. Encourage the use of bookmarks. If you are creating a document that you expect other people to have access to, it really does make sense to at least bookmark the chapters, the chapter headings. It's a very powerful tool. It's very useful to have that. And the fact is, current versions of the product create bookmarks or can create bookmarks on the fly automatically. You really want to go through those if only to delete them because they may not be right. That, by the way, is an option you can turn on or off, and you may choose to turn it off after a while. The other thing about enrichment of KES files is what I've already mentioned, the go-to phrase, again, poorly named feature, just might be a useful way to create a list of characters for a mystery novel or to create a list of important terms for a technical document.
Getting the document. Preparing to read.
Really, I'm going to move fast now. Preparing to read. These are things the user does.
Skimming. Structured skimming while reading continuously. Level 2.
How do you skim when you're blind? I don't know. I would add that I don't think people really know how sighted people skim. At least I don't. It somehow works. Sighted people do somehow know how to do this, i.e. without being able to read every word on a page, because you don't have the time, they can nonetheless scan the page and know and find words. And they can do that not just for proper nouns, but for all sorts of words. It's kind of an amazing trick. And somehow it works. We don't really know how. A blind person cannot quite do that. He can, however, do various things. One of them is there's a feature called browsing, which allows you to read, say, the first sentence in a paragraph and then skip to the first sentence of the next paragraph and keep doing that. Frankly, I'm not sure that's a great idea, but you can do it. There is also a similar feature which I think makes more sense, which is simply listen to the current paragraph, then hit, I think it is the, I know there's a key, and it's the right key on the keyboard. You'll have to look it up. But there is a key that will automatically move you forward to the next paragraph. Do that quickly. That's a good way to get through a document fast. It makes some sense.
Automatic summarization.
It is possible to automatically summarize the document. I don't think the feature works that well. But nonetheless, it can give you a relatively quick way of getting through a document. It is looking for words that have, by frequency, a lot of meaning based on their frequency. Words that occur only once are low-meaning words. Words that occur all the time are also low-meaning. Words that occur a small amount of the time are very meaningful words. They're words that ought to be in sentences that are kept and summarized.
Searching based on format.
No big deal.
Use of existing document structure.
Use of existing document structure, again, bookmarks are the obvious way to go.
Preparing to read, level, actively reading. Taking note, bookmarks as a replacement for visual highlights.
I've already mentioned bookmarks as a useful tool.
Margin notes.
You can make margin notes, that's useful.
Use of a dictionary, thesaurus, or encyclopedia.
Also useful.
Creating an outline.
But the main thing about, and it sort of gets back to active reading, those of you who are Braille users know something about the difference between Braille, reading a book with Braille and listening to a book. One is way better than the other in terms of comprehension. It is generally better to Braille the book. Yeah, it might be harder, it might be slower. It can be a really good way to learn something. Why is that the case? Because you are much more actively participating in the act of getting access to the material. Thinking about this today from some of the other presentations, as a content provider or as someone who makes the content available with the technology, I cannot make meaning for a particular document. That doesn't happen. Meaning is the interface between the reader and the document, and it involves the reader very actively. And it is determined by both how much the reader is paying attention and how the user reads has some impact on attention. It also has to do with what questions the user has in advance. One thing I may not have put there in this description, but is a really big part of active reading, is before you start the reading, already have that list of questions that you want answered by the reading. It's very important to know in advance why you're reading this. It makes a big difference. Creating an outline. Okay. You can do that with Kurzweil 1000 very easily. That's what bookmarks do.
Reading on the go.
Reading on the go, primarily that was put in here because, sometimes you are not chained to your computer or to your laptop. You may want to read with a portable device. You may want to read in all sorts of other places. And it was a way to point out that you can save documents or parts of documents in all sorts of formats that you can use on portable devices.
Reviewing highlighted text.
Reviewing is kind of obvious. Go through your highlights after the fact. You may have noticed, basically I've been using Control-R to do this, and all I'm doing is that, rather than actually reading anything this way. I would really expect customers to do that in general, especially the day before that horrible moment when they're going to have to be tested on what they've read. It would be good to do.
Reviewing notes.
Same thing is true with notes.
Creating an outline or references.
You can certainly do that relatively easily. One thing feature in document summarization is to summarize based on what you already have taken as notes and as bookmarks. Those can be extracted. They may become a study aid. They may also be a useful beginning for writing a paper. You never know.
Reviewing. Conclusions.
I have no conclusions other than to thanks for sitting through this. And really, I'd be happy to answer questions.
Do you have, or is there an audible way, to learn about the latest news and updates?
Once upon a time, there was a feature called... Kessie News, or News from Kessie, and that was in the online dialogue. there is a reason. We were told in no uncertain terms from the beginning that we could not ourselves spontaneously ask the internet questions without the user's express permission, even in all sorts of situations. That was true, maybe is still true. That's the main reason that isn't done automatically. I certainly could do it automatically. That might be kind of nice. In the absence of that, it is a good thing to check, I would say, once every couple months. But yeah, I'm sorry, it's not automatic. But if you'd like it to be automatic, I could certainly think about that. It's not that hard.
You mentioned that the program is for Windows. Is there a possibility that it might be coming to the Mac in the future?
Kurzweil 1000 has never been on the Mac. Having said that, Kurzweil 3000, which is the product for, in general, for people with learning disabilities, is available on the Macintosh. To a large extent, that has to do with product volume more than anything else. I don't know if it's still true, but it used to be that basically 10% of the unit sales of a product would go to a Mac and 90% to a PC. Maybe that's changing in the blindness space. I could imagine that not even being true, because blind people moved almost en masse, some of them at least, to a Mac platform.
Yeah.
In large part because, gosh, a free screen reader is a pretty appealing kind of thing to reason for doing that. So it's, I can imagine it being a good idea. I would actually very much like to do something like that. It has been in the works for, frankly, a long time. I don't know. In the works, I say not from a development perspective, but from a we're thinking about the idea perspective. Again, I'd like to thank all of you for coming. I think Debbie has handed around, you know, basically lead sheets. Treat them as lead sheets if you want. Treat them as a way of communicating to me if you want. I will pay attention to them. Thank you.
For more exclusive audio coverage, visit blindbargains.com or download the Blind Bargains app for your iOS or Android device. Blind Bargains audio coverage is presented by the AT Guys, online at atguys.com.
This has been another Blind Bargains audio podcast. Visit blindbargains.com for the latest deals, news, and exclusive content. This podcast may not be retransmitted, sold, or reproduced without the express written permission of AT Guys.
Copyright 2015.